Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I am your host, Mark.
And I'm Yucca.
And today we are going to do kind of a survey of the different flavors of paganism and how that all fits together and how non-theist paganism fits into that whole taxonomy, and maybe a little bit about how those different groups relate to one another. Because especially for our listeners who are coming from the atheist community and are just starting to explore a ritual spirituality within the broad framework of paganism, it can be very confusing to know what all these different branches of paganism are. And I hear often people asking, well, what's the definition of paganism? So we're going to kind of start there and then branch out into all these different flavors and traditions that get involved in the pagan community. So that's the plan for today.
Exactly. Yeah. And also for our folks who are coming from pagan side, a lot of this can be pretty confusing. There's a lot of different names out there and a lot of different, what one person means when they say something can be a little bit different. So we're going to be coming at this from our understanding, and know that neither of us are scholars in this area or the definitive authority, but we're going to work through what our understanding is and share that with you.
Right. And a lot of, you know, how you learn this stuff is really through sort of oral history and kind of verbally transmitted lore through connections in the pagan community. So that automatically makes it into a game of telephone. And so it is not only possible, but just about certain that there are things that we're going to say in this podcast where we don't get it exactly right. That's not intentional. It's just where our understanding leads to. And so if people want to email with comments at thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com or comment on the podcast website, we're happy to respond to all those, and we certainly hope that we're not going to offend anyone. But this is our best shot at trying to give people an understanding of what that whole constellation of practices that generally calls itself paganism is.
Yeah. So I think the first place to start is perhaps with the word pagan or paganism.
Yes, and this is complicated by the fact that Christians typically use pagan to mean everything that isn't Christian.
Or at least everything that's not Abrahamic.
Yes, sometimes.
They wouldn't refer to somebody who is Jewish or Muslim as being a pagan, but pretty much everyone else.
But pretty much everybody else, exactly. And that is not the way that people in the pagan community use the word pagan. In the Christian context, pagan is a pejorative term. Mm-hmm. It's you're not doing the right thing if you're doing something pagan.
Yeah, you're celebrating that. Oh, those evil pagan holidays like Halloween and pagan practices. Yeah.
Yes, pagan practices like Christmas trees. But don't get me started. When we talk about what constitutes a pagan, many have tried to find a consistent thread that runs through all of the different practices that self-identify as pagan, and nobody's been able to find one other than this. They call themselves pagan. Honestly, that's the only thing that is completely consistent. There are qualities that are very common, like reverence for the earth, mm-hmm. is very common among pagan traditions, but there are pagan traditions that do not have that as one of their values.
Yeah.
And so
or nominally have it, but perhaps not in the main focus.
Right, that it's not a priority so much as, say, worshiping particular gods or conducting particular rites at certain times of the year or whatever it is.
And the root of the word actually relates back to the earth or the countryside, if I understand correctly.
That was my understanding, that the Latin word paganus means country dweller, and that it had a connotation of meaning a rube, a hick, an uninformed backward person from the sticks.
Yeah.
And that's why it was used by the Catholic Church starting in the Middle Ages to refer to people who were practicing practices which were considered at least unpalatable, if not heretical, because they weren't up to date with the very latest in Catholic practices.
Yeah.
Or they adhered to practices that they had had from their ancestors, which predated Christianity and were therefore pagan, right?
And hadn't been adopted
by Christianity. Church.
Yes.
Because, I mean, we should say right now, one of the things that Christianity has been very successful about is in simply taking everything popular in a religious sense. When Christianity moves into an area, it tends to adopt all the stuff that's popular among the people who live there, and they just Christianize it.
You can keep doing your thing. Yeah, you can keep doing what you've always been doing. You're just understanding it in a different way, and was seen as a win-win, right?
Yes.
Of course, that depends on one's perspective, but you get to keep having your goddess figure or your whatever your tradition is, your solstice celebrations. And
sure, and we turn gods into saints, right?
We develop,
which is often another word for invent, stories about these saints that are Christian stories about their martyrdom or their miracle working or whatever it is. And then suddenly Bridget becomes a saint in Ireland, a beloved saint. And so people can continue worshiping her, even though she was an Irish goddess before Christianity arrived.
And so, of course, Mary throughout much of the world.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Because Mary was a relatively minor figure in the Christ story, actually. But it turned out that there were a lot of people that just weren't going to go with this God thing if they didn't get a goddess along with it. And so Mary became, you know, this elevated figure.
Today. Yeah.
Yes, which she is today, this elevated figure whose cult is so powerful that eventually the Catholic Church decided to agree that she had been taken bodily up into heaven upon her death. But enough of that.
We're talking about paganism today.
That's somebody else's religion, and it's not mine. So when we talk about what pagan means, there is a lot of debate about that. And one of the things that's really unfortunate, I think, in parts of the pagan community, at least in the United States, is that there are people who will try to be gatekeepers. They will say, well, this is pagan and that's not, so these people need to be expelled from our community, or they can't wear the label of pagan, which of course is, you know, no great social benefit. it's not like being a pagan is this terrific thing in the eyes of the average citizen.
Well, it's not, but I think that often comes from a place where people have really created their identity around their rightness or their true believerness. And I think that often is a response of coming out of a real kind of oppressive background with whatever religion they're coming out of and going into paganism. So they're trying to protect themselves. They're forming this identity, and it's really threatening when somebody else isn't fitting their great perfect image of themselves, because it challenges that image of themselves.
Yes, I think that's true, and I think that it's particularly true of people who have fled particularly fundamentalist Abrahamic religions, and arrived in paganism, but haven't really broken off the framework of Abrahamic religion, which is, first of all, that what you believe is really important, that faith is a big deal. Whereas historically, back in old times, in, you know, Greek, Roman, Egyptian cultures, Celtic cultures, we don't have much indication that faith was anything. The cultures that existed there didn't care whether you believed in gods or not. They just wanted you to do the rituals because that's what you did to glue your society together. So I do see people, you know, coming out of really bad experiences with, say, evangelical Christianity, which is a very authoritarian, harsh, punitive kind of tradition. And they're glad to be out from under that, but then they kind of turn around and start applying authoritarian, harsh, punitive values to other people that aren't following their exact path.
Sure, because it's a worldview, it's a framework, then that takes a lot of work to be able to even see that you have it to step out of.
Yeah. Yes, it's the water to the fish. It's what they're accustomed to as a context. And paganism is, by and large, a radically different framing of the relationship of humans to the planet, of the value of the material world, of the sacredness of the body and of bodily processes like sexuality. Mm-hmm. These are fundamentally very, very, very different than the Abrahamic religions have. And so it's not enough if you really want to arrive in the pagan framework. It's not enough to fold your Christian flag, move over and raise your pagan flag. You really have to have a completely different understanding of the nature of the world, and that's a process. It can take a while for people to go through that transition.
Yeah. And during that time, there's often a lot of the gatekeeping that we were talking about. And then that's not always the only reason for the gatekeeping, but it's there. It's personally quite annoying. I see it all over the place.
I don't like it either. Some of that is because gatekeeping does tend to get leveled at non-theist pagans more frequently than many others. Yeah. Although not absolutely, I have heard people who are in that gatekeeping mode of you're not really a pagan say the same thing about Wiccans, which is astounding to me. But their position is no, the only people who are real pagans are people who are trying to reestablish the traditional practices of worshiping old gods from cultures from thousands of years ago. And there was no, you know, great mother goddess and horned god in those cultures. And Wicca is a modern invention, and so it doesn't count. Now, I think that's silly, because all of neo-paganism is a modern invention, including Reconstructionist paths.
Mm-hmm.
And failure to acknowledge that doesn't make it less true.
Yeah.
But still, I've heard it, I've seen it. And I've certainly heard plenty of, well, if you don't believe in gods, then you aren't a pagan, which I utterly disagree with. Paganism is what you do. It's not what you believe.
I have been encouraged there seems to be more acceptance. At least I've been exposed to more recently. I've heard more people using the term non-theist pagan than say, even 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, some interesting things are emerging, because as a movement, non-theist paganism has become a lot more visible and loud over the past 5 years or so. I take a little bit of credit for that. I've certainly produced a lot of stuff and been kind of loud myself. And of course, you know, we've created the Atheopagan Society, which, you know, you're involved with. And So some of it, I think, has been a granting of permission to people that didn't really literally believe in gods to be public about that. There was a poll of American pagans that was just published on Reddit. Couldn't have been more than 2 or 3 weeks ago. And when I went to go and find it again, I couldn't, because the search tools in Reddit are terrible. And it was just really hard to, I couldn't find it. But in that poll, 24% of respondents said that they don't work with gods. 24%.
Yeah.
That is not insignificant. If it was only a handful of us, you know, yelling and screaming and saying, you know, we have the right to be here, then maybe the problem was with us. But if 24% or even 10% of people participating in paganism writ large are non-theists, that's a significant cohort of the population, and they very definitely belong there as much as anybody else.
Yeah. Well, Mark, why don't we talk about some of the different groups and a little bit how non-theism fits into that? Because non-theism is a really interesting group because it overlaps with a lot of these other groups and yet also has some of its own traditions as well, or groups. Yeah.
Yes. Certainly, you can be a non-theist in a lot of these different traditions, not all of them. Mm-hmm. The Reconstructionists, generally not. You have to be a believer, which is bizarre because, as I said, in Greek and Roman and Egyptian culture, believing in the gods was not the big thing. It was performing the rituals that was the big thing. The reason that Socrates was executed was because he refused to perform the public rituals, not because he didn't believe in the gods.
Yeah. So that's a group to start, or that's a... So we've got umbrellas within umbrellas, right? So
yes.
Reconstructionists. These are essentially groups who are doing exactly what it sounds like. They're trying to fit as best they can tell what was happening historically into their modern life. Now, obviously, there's going to be things where that can't happen because we live in very different, even different climates, different parts of the world. The human society is very different now than it was.
And but the last time that I tried to burn an ox as a sacrifice, my neighbors really complained.
It was a little bit too strong of a smell there.
Well, and it takes a long time to burn an ox.
You know what else? Transporting them.
Yeah.
That's pretty, yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing. So yes, exactly as you say. There is a great emphasis on surviving historical documents and available scholarship about what the actual practices and philosophies of the people living back in those societies were. And the idea is that they are literally resurrecting these gods or bringing them back from some kind of dormant state that they were in when no one was worshiping them. Mm-hmm. And that
deep love of the history and the culture around it and the art and just really diving into that whole what we can reconstruct of the world.
Yes. Yes. And I think it can be said that, you know, the cultures that we're talking about, the Greek, the Roman, etc., they were so radically different than our modern culture in so many ways that that the project of Reconstructionists, I think, is very challenging in some ways. I don't know how you reconcile, you know, wanting to be a full-on Reconstructionist with the idea that the society that with the whose religion you're seeking to reconstruct was built on slavery, for example. I don't know how you reconcile that. But there are people who are very, very serious about this, very scholarly about it. And some of them self-identify as pagan. Others do not. Others call themselves Reconstructionists or sometimes polytheists, but they do not self-identify as pagan. So if they don't want it, then I don't think it should be forced on them, personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a huge group. I think maybe the next to touch on would be Wicca.
Wicca probably is the largest.
The most well-known. Yeah.
Yes, Wicca is writ large. It's the largest of the subgroups under paganism. If you agree that Wicca is paganism, which I do, it seems like pretty much almost everybody does.
Widely, I think that's fairly widely agreed upon.
Right. That said, Wicca is a modern invention. It draws on some English folk traditions, but it really was published and put together by Gerald Gardner in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. He made claims that this was an unbroken tradition down from eons past to the modern day.
Hear people referring to it as the old craft and things like that because of this element of it.
Yes, the old religion, etc. Mm-hmm. There's pretty good evidence that that's not the case, and there's very little evidence that it is the case. People have differing opinions on this, often very vehement opinions about it. I believe that the reason that those opinions are vehement is because of the error of assuming that because something is old, it's therefore valid.
Mm-hmm.
This is a decision that we make about religious practices that we don't apply anywhere else in our culture.
We don't have a problem with general relativity because our understanding of that is new.
Right.
Right.
We don't want old medical technology. We don't want old tools. We want the latest medical technology. We want the stuff that's actually been proved to work the most effectively. You know, if I start having a series of headaches, I am not going to let somebody drill into my skull because they need to let the evil spirits out. That's just not happening. But there
with
is
religion. Yeah.
Well, and you must remember that the Abrahamic religions have been beating the drum of their age for a long, long time. This has been going on for centuries, and therefore it must be valid because my grandfather and his grandfather and his grandfather and his grandfather, they all did the same thing. My opinion about that is it's kind of like, you know, if you have a tradition of home builders, you know, a family of a lineage of people that have been home builders over time. That's kind of like saying, well, my great grandfather hit himself in the thumb with a hammer, and my grandfather hit himself in the thumb with a hammer, and my father hit himself in the thumb with a hammer. So by God, I'm going to hit myself in the thumb with a hammer too.
Yeah.
Just because it's traditional doesn't mean it's necessarily valid in any useful way.
Yeah. Well, but let's come back, because whether or not Wicca is passed down from generation to generation or is something that we've seen emerge within the last century or so, it's a huge group that has a lot of different, it's spread into many different things, but there's some kind of core ideas within it.
Yes.
And one of them is the God and goddess dualism that we have, and within some groups then that the understanding of deity is then broken into the three system, you know, with your mother, maiden, and crone, and I've heard different versions for the god side, but the blue, like, god,
the holly king, man, and the oak king, and the green
and,
man,
yeah,
those kinds of things.
And then there seems to be a common ritual structure.
Yes.
that goes along with that. And that, I think, has really influenced much of modern neo-paganism, that the structure of casting the circle, and which, as I understand, was actually borrowed from many other traditions and put together in his sort of unique way.
Yes, yes. Some of those things derive from Western ceremonial magic that comes out of grimoires from the Renaissance and that and the 18th century, those kinds of things. Others of it, there's overlap with Masonic traditions, and also with Rosicrucian traditions. You know, I think Gardner took a lot of these pieces and sewed them together into something that worked as a ritual structure. And the Wiccan ritual structure does work. Mm-hmm. You cast the circle, you create a sacred space container, you invoke the directions and their metaphorical meanings, you invoke the goddess and the god, unless you're a Dianic Wiccan, in which case you just invoke the goddess. Then you proceed to the working of whatever transformational experience is supposed to happen within the main meat of the ritual. And then you back out by undoing all the things that you did at the beginning. So you dismiss the gods, you dismiss the directions, you undo the circle, and then the ritual's over.
Yeah, so it's a sandwich, right? Or
yes.
Zipping, you know, zipping up, zipping it out, right?
Right, exactly so. And that kind of ritual structure works very well. It's very flexible, so it allows for tremendous creativity. And it has permeated many other parts of paganism outside of formal Wicca. There are traditions within formal Wicca that have to do with the lineage or who people learned from. There are Gardnerian witches who derive their lineage directly from Gerald Gardner. There are Alexandrian witches who derive their lineage from Victor Alexander. There are there's the fairy tradition, which is still pretty much a Wiccan tradition, which was Cora and somebody Anderson, maybe Victor Anderson. Maybe I'm getting this wrong. Anyway,
but let me pause there, because there's something with the older forms of Wicca that many of them have in common that some of the newer forms don't, is that they were coven based.
Yes.
And initiation based. You had to find it. You didn't just decide that you were going to become a Wiccan. You had to find a group. You have to go through the process of a training. There was often a year and a day. And then there were or are levels to work through, and often presented as mystery traditions in which the mysteries are being passed on to you.
Yes, and there's a lot of secrecy around a lot of those traditions, although the secrets aren't really very much secrets anymore because of the internet.
Yeah.
We don't live in an era where, you know, mystery traditions work out very well because somebody always spills the beans and then everybody knows. Mm-hmm. But yes, those are initiatory traditions where you join a coven. The coven is headed by a high priestess. There is some sort of a training process that you submit yourself to, and then you go through an initiation into a second level, and then at a third level you become a high priestess yourself, and in theory you then hive off, go form your own coven, and that's how the religion propagates itself. That's not really how most paganism is propagating today.
Yeah.
People are opting in because they see value and meaning in the values and the aesthetics and the practices of pagan religion. And so they just kind of jump on board and start doing stuff.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with that. People learn things from books. They learn things from classes or workshops that they take. And they do a lot of making it up. And making it up is actually a great way to learn how to be a good religionist, a good ritualist, because you'll find the stuff that works for you and the stuff that doesn't work for you. I mean, I've had classes and taken training in ritual stuff somewhat, but mostly it's 30 plus years of leading and being in circles that brings me to the ritual practice that I have today. And what we're talking about now is what is called eclectic paganism. Eclectic paganism basically just draws from every source that it can in order to come up with a meaningful religious practice. And of course, because it draws on all the sources that it can, its Achilles heel is cultural appropriation, mm-hmm. which is something that we probably don't have enough time to talk about a lot now.
I think that deserves its own full episode.
I agree.
A really, really critical and very nuanced topic in a lot of areas.
I agree. But I did feel the need to mention it because when you're in the mode of just sort of drawing on whatever traditions strike your fancy, you can lose track of the fact that some of those traditions are living traditions of people who don't want them taken from them.
Yeah.
And you need to be respectful of that. And some people are, some people aren't.
Yeah.
So eclectic paganism. This is, I would say, by far the largest category beyond Wicca in the active pagan community today are people that were attracted because, who knows, they were attracted by the aesthetic, they were attracted by the archetype of the witch, they were attracted by the independence.
TikTok video.
Okay, they were attracted by a TikTok video.
I am not on TikTok, but apparently that's a big thing there.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I know that it was a big thing on Tumblr for a long time. Lots and lots of Tumblr witchcraft blogs. Yeah. But for whatever reason, they choose to opt into this constellation of religious possibilities. And for some, it's not even religious. For some, it's strictly about supposed magic making, doing rituals to cast spells and make changes happen in the world. Now, I don't believe that those changes actually happen in the world, but there are a lot of people who do.
So that's actually something we didn't even discuss ahead of time. We didn't brainstorm about this, but the idea of a witch and a pagan, right? You'll often hear those either used interchangeably or hand in hand.
Yeah.
But there are some folks who identify as witches who do not identify as pagan.
Yes.
In my community, which is a heavily Catholic community, there is a lot of brujeria which is practiced, and they do not, for the most part, consider themselves pagan. Mm-hmm. But they are Catholic.
Right. They consider themselves good Christians, but they happen to do this witchcraft practice that is... and it's full of the symbology of Catholicism. It's full of saints and incense and stained glass and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a Venn diagram. There is a heavy overlap between people who consider themselves witches and people who consider themselves pagans, but there are those that consider themselves only one and not the other. I don't consider myself a witch because I don't find the term very helpful. Although I'm happy to refer to what I do as witchcraft, even though I don't think of myself as a witch.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think some people choose the term as a way of reclaiming that powerful status, particularly when it comes to our Western relation to women.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yes, I mean, for many, it's like saying I'm a witch is saying I'm powerful, I'm independent, I'm capable, I have abilities, so deal with it, right?
Yeah, and that acknowledging that you do have power and influence in the world and that you're going to use it,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether mm-hmm. or not you're believing in literal magic or not, or and we have a episode several months back at this point on our different takes on what magic is.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. My understanding is that the word witch originally comes from a root which is wick, which is to bend. And so I think that the idea there amongst those who are trying to reclaim that word is that it is those that have the ability to make change. And that yeah. by claiming the word, they claim that they have the ability to make change, whether it's in themselves or in the broader society and in the world.
Mm-hmm. And then that's what witchcraft is doing. Mm-hmm. It's the craft of enacting change.
Yes, yes.
So
we have eclectic paganism / witchcraft. We have Wicca, the members of which call themselves witches.
Mm-hmm.
We have Reconstructionist paths, some of whom may call themselves witches, but most of them of whom probably don't.
Druids.
Now, yes, let's talk yeah. about Druids. Druidism is a movement that started in the late 18th century as a kind of Romantic era reimagining of the Druids of the ancient Celtic world, about which we have almost no information because they didn't have a written language, and the only record we have is their enemies writing about them.
Yes, which is quite interesting because on the one hand, they wanted to make themselves seem good and brave and fantastic for defeating these people, but also they wanted to demonize them to feel justified and righteous in their...
Right.
So that's a really fun area to dive into on exploring what it is we do know and not. But most of what emerged in the 18th century is very poetic reimagining or colorful reimagining.
Yes. Yes. And very contextualized in the England of the 18th century.
Yeah.
So there are two main druidic organizations. I know that there are more than that, but there are two main ones. One of them is Obod, which is the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. And the other is ADF, which is Arndrach Fein, which means a druidic thing, a druidic faction, a druidic collection, okay. a grouping together. Yeah.
That sounds like that was Irish.
Yes. Diesel.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know that Obod sometimes uses some Welsh words, but from what I've seen, they kind of pull from a lot of different, they sort of do a pan-Celtic
yes.
pull instead of focusing, although a lot of focus on the Gaelic side, but for wherever they can find that, what they're looking for.
Yes, and this is also an initiatory tradition. I don't know whether it's a mystery tradition or not, but I know that you rise through levels. You know, you first become, first you're a druid, and then you're an ovate, and then you're a, what is it? It's Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. So then you're an ovate, and then finally you're a druid. No, then finally you're a bard. I'm sorry. It's druid, ovate, bard. So there are levels of elevation within the organization. And so it's just
very nature focused as well. That's a major element. Nature and often the poetic element as well.
Yes.
And my understanding is that many of these traditions pull heavily from the Eisteddfods in Wales, which are the poetic gatherings. But mm. those also are their own sort of reimagining of our past And so there's a lot of borrowing between the two, but many folks who participate in the Aesthetvods would most definitely not identify as pagan. They are good Christians or Anglicans or whatever particular group they're from.
Sure, sure. So we just want to mention Druidry because it's another major set of paths within paganism. Most Druids, in my experience, do self-identify as pagans.
That's been And I've come across quite a few solitary Druids at this point as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. People that have joined Druidic circles for purposes of training and then left. They prefer a solitary practice, which is fine.
I know that I researched it quite a bit in my late teens, early 20s, very, very drawn to the aesthetics of it, but didn't like the hierarchy elements of it.
Mm-hmm. It is very hierarchical. They have a, I guess it's called the Arch Druid or something like that. I don't know what the head druid is called, but there is one person at the very top of Obod, certainly. The someone who had been that for many, many years, just recently retired, and now a woman is the head of Obod. But it's very hierarchical. It's got those
tiers. They have a podcast too, don't they?
They do. It's very good. It has music in it, and so it tends to be sort of shorter discussions or news items, and then interspersed by various kind of nice Celtic music things.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a nice podcast. So there's that. There's the Druids.
Heathens.
And then there's the Asatra, and which are also overlapping with people who call themselves heathens, who are Germanic / Nordic Reconstructionists. They have their own traditions, their own rituals, which are not at all in the same style as the Wiccan rituals. And many people are very, very serious about their pursuit of these traditions. I don't know a whole lot about it. It's never really resonated with me. The one thing that I do know about it is that there is a constant challenge within heathen circles to be expelling white supremacists, because there are white supremacists who have chosen to take on various Germanic pre-Christian symbology, which started with the Nazis and has continued ever since.
And just some of the funny irony in there is that those folks who are looking at cultures like the Vikings and not recognizing that they were an incredibly multicultural and often racial group. Mm-hmm. So that's another topic, but that it's not even a great group to steal your symbols from, because they weren't what you're pretending they are. So
right. But it does bear saying that, especially because of the association with the Vikings, there's this sort of badass quality to the symbology and iconography of the Viking Norse pagans.
Sure, yeah.
And the kinds of people that gravitate towards being white supremacists tend to want to think of themselves as being badass.
Yeah.
They just do. It's kind of sad. It goes directly to the issue of toxic masculinity, but we'll leave that one alone for now.
Another whole episode topic.
Yes.
So there's definitely a lot of other groups in there. These are the ones that I have the most exposure to be able to speak to. Can you think of any ones that were missing?
Sure,
background
sure.
with?
The diasporic religions, the African diasporic oh. religions, mm-hmm. like Santeria, Candomblé, Umbanda, Vodou, all of those are products of the export of African slaves to the Americas. Mm-hmm. And so they tend to have indigenous African practices heavily sort of mixed together from among cultures because people were thrown in together, mm-hmm. as well as heavily sewn with Christian symbology so that they could practice it while pretending to be Christians. Mm-hmm. I don't know very much about the specifics of these traditions at all. I do know that there is a tradition of ritual possession in at least some of them. And that is a fascinating topic that we could go on and on and on about here. But these are radically different from, say, Wicca or Druidism. Not necessarily particularly earth reverent, to my understanding. Very much about spell casting and the ability to influence events and people mm-hmm. Through ritual magical practices.
And do I understand correctly that these would be groups that some people would identify as pagan and others would not within these practices?
Yes. I think that there are people within those practices that would not want to be considered pagan, but then there are others who actively participate in the pagan community, like going to conventions and conferences and things like that. And these are living traditions that derive from African roots. And it is important to understand that as a distinction from any kind of reconstructionism. These are alive, and they've been alive ever since the beginning of the slave trade into the Americas. Mm-hmm. So there's a tremendous respect that is warranted, and a sensitivity to the feelings and sensibilities of the practitioners of these religions, because they come out of a place of tremendous struggle and they're very worthy of respect in that sense. Not that the others are not, but there really is a difference between resuscitating something in the last 50-100 years versus practicing something which has persisted under the most incredibly hostile circumstances for many centuries. Mm.
So let's circle back to the non-theist aspect of these practices, and then non-theism as its own form of paganism as well.
Sure. To begin with, it should be said that in most of these cases, you can be a theist or a non-theist. And we need to talk about what a non-theist means. A non-theist includes somebody who might invoke the names or symbols of a god but not believe that that god literally exists.
Mm-hmm.
That's still a non-theist. People who call themselves like archetypal theists or Jungian theists, that's still non-theism. When I talk about literal theism, what I'm talking about is somebody who believes that a god is an actual being, an invisible, intelligent, self-aware being with agency which can affect change in the world. It's not an idea. It's not something that lives in your mind. It's
a person.
It's a person.
Yeah, maybe not a human, but they are are someone. They are a person.
That's right. They are a person. And many pagans believe that their gods are like that. Many pagans don't believe that their gods are like that. They believe that gods are symbols that we've created to put human faces on phenomena like death and love and war, natural forces like lightning and floods and the ocean. There's nothing wrong with either of those approaches. People get a lot of meaning out of both of those approaches. I'm a non-theist. I've always been a non-theist, although I played along for a very long time in circles where a lot of the other people apparently were theists. I always thought we were all playing this let's pretend game together because it was edifying and fun and meaningful in our lives and helped to provide happiness and wisdom and memorable moments.
That's very similar. We've spoken about it before, but for me too, growing up pagan and then as an adult going, oh, wait. Oh, they're serious.
Yeah.
Oh, they mean this. Okay, wow. Yeah.
Yes.
I was misreading this for years. So, yeah.
Exactly so. And so you really check yourself. You're like, okay, I've been doing this for a long time. How did this not ever really occur to me?
Yeah.
So non-theist paganism has several of its own paths as well. I mean, you can be a non-theist Wiccan. You can, you can be a non-theist druid. But you can also be a naturalistic pagan, which means that your understanding of the world is that the universe is entirely natural, that everything follows the laws of physics. Everything is made up of energy and matter.
Yeah.
And not in a woo-woo way, like, energy, but in a literal sense of the capacity to do work causing forces between particles that lead to change.
Yeah. And if something appears to be violating the laws of physics, either we're wrong about what the laws of physics are, right?
Right.
Or we just don't understand what's happening yet. We don't have a good explanation. But there isn't supernatural. There isn't anything beyond natural because natural is what exists.
Yes. That there is nothing that is not natural. And so if gravity is the law, if gravity is one of the low-level root requirements of the nature of space-time as we live in it, then no being is going to be able to transcend that. It's going to be subject to gravity just like everything else. One of the reasons that I don't believe in literal gods is that there is no logical chain that can be used to take an incorporeal being and have it make physical change in the world. At some point, there has to be some nexus between the non-corporeal, what I would call imaginary being, and the physical universe. Even if it's just as much as, well, I won't use that example because it'll lead down a rabbit hole. Never mind. I was going to talk about the ghost in the machine and the idea of a soul.
Okay, yes. Well, let's rewind a little bit, though, because we're talking about, so there's non-theism is simply not believing in gods or deities as literal beings.
Yes.
And so there are, you can be a non-theist within most of those groups that we've talked about. And then we were saying that there are some groups within paganism that are their own non-theist groups. So we said naturalistic pagans.
Yes. There is the path that I created called atheopaganism, which is a specific path that is a form of naturalistic paganism, but it also includes some value definitions, some declarations of value. There are the four sacred pillars, which are love, truth, beauty, and life. And then there are the 13 principles, which we seek to live by. We practice a wheel of the year around the course of the year, celebrating at the equinoxes and solstices and the points in between them.
Which very look much different like, for different people.
Yes.
Because it's rooted in place.
Yes. But that mm-hmm. part is very much like Wicca. Wicca celebrates a similar wheel of the year, although the meaning that they apply to some of those holidays may be very different than the meanings that I apply to them. Mm-hmm. So that is an available path. There are, and then you start branching out beyond what may be considered pagan, like scientific pantheism, which is basically a naturalistic way of understanding the world, but it doesn't have a ritual component. It doesn't have holidays and observances and those kinds of things. It's just a cosmology.
So pantheism would be all God? So all is sacred, all is divine?
There are two kinds of pantheism. There's scientific pantheism, which is naturalistic and does not believe that there is God anywhere. Mm-hmm. But it's all sacred. It's not divine, but it's all sacred, which if I have to, I'll go into. Then there are the pantheists who believe in panentheism, which believes that there is literal divinity, that the universe is intelligent, and that this intelligence suffuses the entire universe and kind of runs the whole show.
Hmm. I have heard some Christian interpretations go in that direction.
Yes, I think for people that are more scientifically literate in the Christian community, panentheism becomes attractive because it doesn't necessarily fly in the face of the laws of physics.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike burning bushes that talk and
sure,
parting the Red Sea and raising people from the dead. So where are we? We've branched off. So let's talk a little bit more about non-theist paganism and how this fits into this overall picture. One of the things that has been very challenging, as we talked about earlier, has been this idea of gatekeeping, that mm-hmm. certain people who have very strong opinions about the importance of their particular way of practicing start deciding that if somebody's practice is radically different enough from theirs, that they must not belong in the same club, and therefore that those people need to be excluded from the club. There are two big pieces to talk about in relation to that. The first one is, it's silly. There's no pagan pope. There's no pagan organization that gives you your pagan merit badge that makes you a pagan. You can't kick people out of an organization or of a community that has no organization to it. There's no mechanism for doing that. So it's silly even to try.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it just doesn't recognize that being as small a minority as we are, our only hope for influence in the world is if we're together. Splintering us into smaller and smaller groups and calving off groups that don't agree with this group over here is just really not the way to be helping culture to change, to be making a positive impact on the value system of the world. That's just not really how you get anywhere. And I mean, I have very strong opinions about my non-theism, but I have never and will never suggest that, say, a Hellenic Reconstructionist doesn't belong in the pagan community. I would never say such a thing.
Yeah. Well, this was a brief overview. This could be the topic of an entire podcast series on its own, going into the different groups and their history and what do people believe and all of that. But hopefully this has been, for those of you who are coming in from the atheist side, hopefully this has been enlightening or in some way. And we, of course, as we mentioned before, always love to hear from folks at our email address. So that's thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com.
Yes. And if you're coming from the pagan side and you feel that your particular flavor did not get represented or it got misrepresented, we're happy to listen to that as well. We're always interested in learning more. Obviously, we are living the paths that we are living. And one of the things about a the kind of science-based paganism that Yucca and I practice is that we don't spend a lot of time diving into the sort of cultural ethnographies of different kinds of paganism. Our focus is much more on the natural world, science, learning more about the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, neither of us claims to be an anthropologist of paganism, and we're happy to hear from you and happy to learn more.
Exactly.
So this turned into a really kind of great conversation, Yucca. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. So we will be back next week, and we're going to be getting into a little bit more about the season we're going into.
Yes, so exactly.
We'll see you all then. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.